This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Best of the rest. Best of the rest. Best of the rest. Best of the rest.
An indie comics podcast.
Let's hear it.
I think Jazz Maynard actually kind of fits in as a really good contemporary tale.
Although it was originally published in 2007 as well.
Yes, but it's one of those where, you know, it's not a superhero story. The technology is contemporary and everything, so I think it'll read good. It still reads good now, and it'll probably read good in over the next 10 years.
I think so, or 20 years, because there's really nothing in it that dates the book. It's not tied into any type of events like Ghost Money. Ghost Money was definitely tied into world events at the time. And so it's not. And, I'm trying to categorize this book as far as putting into a genre, and I can't think of one. It's sort of crime, but not really. It's not crime noir in the way that Normandy Gold and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo was when we talked about those on our last episode. It's not really espionage. It's not superhero. I don't know. What would you think? How would you?
Would you call it like an action adventure?
That's probably like the closest.
If it was a movie, it'd be an action adventure.
That's probably the closest. That's probably the most accurate thing.
But it does have the crime elements. It does have the action elements. What I kind of like about it? There's really no romance in it.
No.
Well, at least for the main character.
Not for the main character, right?
They don't have to throw in that token romance, or that love triangle, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So
I'm really enjoying it, and. Just as a way
I'm having a little problem trying to keep up with everything.
Well, it gets very convoluted. Yes, it's a very complex story.
And I'm having to go back and reread stuff, and the art is consistent, so you can tell characters different by their faces. But I guess I think the fifth book came out, and it took me a while to figure out who the guy is that he's hanging with now was one of his buddies back in the day, because I thought that was the
Tio.
But I thought that was the female thief that he met earlier. At first I thought that was her. So I am having some issues keeping up with characters with it, but it's not from the art.
Right. And just for people who are listening, who may not be familiar with it, Jazz Maynard, the main character is, from Barcelona, from the neighborhood of El Ravel, and he's been living in New York City. He's a jazz trumpet player. But as you learn reading this book, he's a lot more than that. I was thinking today how to describe it, and I said he's an amalgam of Maynard Ferguson, James Bond, and Batman. I mean, he's a badass character, and he is.
Well, who's the creative team?
They just go by single names. The writer is Raoul, and the artist is Roger. We pronounce Roger in English, but I think in Spanish it's Roger.
You got to roll that R?
Yeah, you got Roger. But that's all I hear. They just go by the single names. And, of course, they're not familiar to American audiences at all. But I was trying to look at it based on some comments that you said when we talked about Ghost Money as to, how Europe, things are generally, especially city streets and neighborhoods, are usually smaller, more compacted. There's not as much, not as spacious as we're used to here in the United States. And I was seeing some of that in there, especially the scenes in Barcelona. This little neighborhood where everybody's from. And But anyway, so kind of the way the story goes is Jazz has been living in New York City, playing in jazz clubs, and he gets a letter handed to him. It's from his sister that he hasn't seen. He hasn't seen his family in 10 years or more since he came to the States. And it turns out she's in the States, and she's has fallen into the wrong hands. Some people are using her for not good things. And so he has to go and kind of rescue her.
Yep. And then he takes her back home and then gets pulled into the local politics that he thought he left behind.
Yeah. So there's a, like I said, this, it's a very complex story. There's the,
well, there's also a heist part of it too, isn't there?
Yeah. It starts out that his sister comes to the United States and gets kidnapped. He rescues her. Takes her back to Spain. The people that kidnapped her, they follow him, or they send people after him. And then we find out that, there's also a heist element. But then the woman there's not a romantic element, but there's a woman that he had feelings for in Barcelona, who's now a reporter for a small newspaper. And she's involved in all this investigation of local political corruption. So he gets pulled into that. And then the police are involved in a different aspect and they're corrupt. So it's a very intricately woven tale. And it's not one that you can, it's probably something you're going to have to read more than once.
Yeah. There's a lot of moving parts, but I'm enjoying it. I just have to, it's not something you're going to breeze through.
Yeah. I mean, because it resembles how life is. Life is not smooth and straightforward all the time.
I often wonder with writers, do they have how the events are going to go, and then they try to take the characters' perspectives and write in the dialogue and all that. I'm fascinated with the creative process to do a story like this with all the moving parts and all the different characters. You know, do you have the end point and then you just kind of figure out how everybody's got to move around to get to that end point?
It really depends on the author. I've heard authors and writers that talk about they have everything plotted out. I mean, they know for the next 30 issues. Lemire seems to be one of those people, based on interviews I've heard with him. Is he knows exactly where he's going next, what the next issue is going to be, and the issue after that, and on and on. Other writers don't. I think they say, okay, I've got half idea of where I want this to end, and then we'll just take off and we'll let it go. And they just, I don't want to say they make it up as they go along, but they don't have everything as tightly constructed and plotted and laid out and outlined as some other writers do.
Yeah, that's never been my forte. I love reading good writing, but I can't write.
I have tried to write, I write some things well. I've never really tried writing much serious fiction, or certainly not a comic book scripting. That would be something interesting to try sometime. But
yeah, but you know, Jazz keeps getting in these situations and getting out, and. Does it seem like each issue ends with a cliffhanger? Does it end with a cliffhanger?
So is it? Yeah, or at least somewhat of a cliffhanger. Because they usually will end it, and then they'll have a page of panels or sample panels from the next issue. So you kind of get an idea of what's going to happen in the following issue.
No, but it's. Now, how many issues? Is it a 6-issue series?
I
haven't been able to find that out.
I haven't either.
I think it's on issue 5, and it seems like we could get into a resolution, but I can see it going on for a bit more.
Yeah, it's not straightforward like Ghost Money. Ghost Money prints on their cover. It's issue 1 of 10, 2 of 10. So I don't know. I've been trying to find out, but I haven't figured out. I haven't found any references to the original series in Spain, so I don't know how many issues it is. I would be shocked if it went much past 10. But who's to say?
No, but it's a good series being put out by Lions Ford, so highly recommend it. Just you're going to have to pay attention to the details.
Yes, pay very
attention. And I guess the only thing that I kind of I find is that sometimes I see the pectoral muscles drawn funny, and I can't quite figure out what's going on.
Especially with those weird ninja-type characters.
Yeah, there's ninjas.
Like what they call those? Something of Cain.
Swords of Cain, or
Swords of Cain, or something like that. Which I haven't figured out exactly who they are either, and they haven't really revealed.
Yeah, they're still. It's on issue 5, and there's still mysteries, and you don't know who's associated with who or such. So they're still working through it, the story. So highly entertaining. But I think I was reading the previews. I think previews came out this week for December, and I think I was seeing where the Jazz Maynard hardcover was being offered. So I don't know if it is going to go to 12 issues now that I think about it.
May not. Probably not. It's going to be a hardcover. All right. Well, so Magnetic Collection, their own website, they contradict everything I said. Like I said, I wouldn't call this a hard-boiled crime noir series. That's exactly how they describe it on their website. Hard-boiled, high-octane crime noir series. So it doesn't feel that way to me, not in the same sense as some of these others that we've talked about, but whatever, how they can call it what they want. It's their property.
144, yeah, the hardcover is coming out December 13th. Yes, the most excellent date. 144 pages, hardcover, full-color crime. Written by Raul.
Raul, yes.
Art and cover by Roger Ibanez Ugina, which I probably didn't pronounce that right.
Probably not, but it really doesn't matter. I doubt he's listening to this podcast. So.
Oh, but you know what? I'm looking at it, and it's volume 1 of the Jazz Maynard, the Barcelona trilogy.
Okay, so it may – all right. It may be like
– I wonder if it's – is it based on a novel? Yeah. You know, the other thing I like about the covers, have you figured out what Stereophonic Action is yet?
No, I haven't.
Because they proclaim boldly on the front cover of every issue that you're going to have Stereophonic Action.
Oh, that's true. I hadn't really thought about what that means. I did see the big mistake they made regarding, I think it was in issue 3. The issue where one of the plots, they found out that one of these guys in here is trying to get a rare coin that was minted in the United States during the Depression, early days of the Depression. There was a coin that was minted on orders of the president. Well, the president would have been Franklin Roosevelt in 1933. The United States went off the gold standard, and all those coins were retrieved and destroyed except 2. And this character is trying to get one of these coins because they're highly valuable. But anyway, they talk about this coin was minted under direction of the President Roosevelt in 1933, which would have been Franklin Roosevelt, but they put Teddy Roosevelt's picture in there.
Well, how many of us could recognize Spanish presidents ministers or whatever they had at that time?
I found it amusing because obviously the artist probably Googled President Roosevelt, and that's what he got. It's like, I don't know what President Roosevelt looks like.
Or maybe he was just reading an issue of Rough Riders.
Maybe he was. Maybe he's an Aftershock fan.
Oh, wait a second, though. This is written in 2007.
Yeah, well, unless he was a time traveler. So. But anyway, that was just one of the funny things I noticed that kind of made me
I did not. I did not notice that. I did not put that together. But you're right. 33 would have been FDR.
Right. Not that big a deal. It's just one of those things that made me chuckle when I saw it because it was like, oh, okay.
You know what? I think my comment when I saw it was, oh, it's another comic with Teddy Roosevelt in it.
But it's not a big deal, especially being a Spanish comic. You know, if it was something that was made by in the United States, I'd be less inclined to give them a pass on that. It's like, oh, come on, do your research.
Yeah. You know, so I'm assuming, since it was published in Europe, that the original editions, the word balloons, had Spanish in it. So do artists draw the books without the word balloons, and then the word balloons are edited in later so they can be sized appropriately to the language being used?
I think that may depend on the artist.
Well, let me ask you this. Does the art look like it's pencil and ink, or does it look digital?
I think it's pencil. I think it's penciled.
Can you tell nowadays?
(laughs) 2017, probably not. 2007, I think you might still have been able to tell the difference. I'm not sure that digital art was... I don't know, was digital art sophisticated enough in 2007 where you couldn't tell? But anyway.
Yeah, so I am... I need to get into the sales numbers because we've been doing independent comics, and I'm trying to, you know, we kind of hear what DC's numbers are, Marvel's. I hear Valiant's numbers from listening to Martin and them. But I don't really, you know, some Image. But I'm curious to how some of these independent guys we talk about, how well their numbers are. So like Jazz Maynard, is this like a 5K a month book or 1K?
That's a good question. I wouldn't even begin.
I mean, if you're not in the Diamond 300, can you even get those numbers?
I don't know. I don't know how you get them unless you contacted Lion Forge directly and they got somebody to give them to you. Which I'm not sure they would. So.
No, you're not going to give out information on your business.
No. So. Yeah, I mean, unless they publish it, I don't know. I couldn't begin to tell you. I mean, logic tells you that it can't be that high of a print run. I mean, look at Valiant. Valiant, which is a fairly good size independent publisher, they have quite a bit following. But you look at some of their sales numbers, and you know, 6,000, 7,000 for some of their titles. I haven't been out to the Valiant database in a long time to look at some of what their numbers are. I'm not on my regular computer, so I don't have...
Don't they all work the same?
Well, what I'm saying is I don't have my... password
for the database.
I don't have my password manager on this computer. I'd have to look up the
password. Which is a pretty good database for somebody just keeping it up and not charging people for.
Yes. Sales data. I have to log in. All right. Anyway. Another long pause we're going to have to do something with. Because
yeah, I put it in here and I can't find any info on what the sales numbers are for independents. But, you know, I think that, well, you got to, you know, I don't think most comic shops, I mean, are comic shops, and how are they incentivized to bring in independent books that might sit on the shelf?
The shop I go to, they bring in a lot of stuff. In fact, I know they've got Jazz Maynard sitting in there. It comes in once a month, and they've got extra copies. I got one for you that you couldn't find.
Yep. Oh, here's a site where they've got estimated numbers. So Jazz Maynard, number one, 2,393. It was number 400 for the month of June 2017.
Okay.
Two spots above Grim Fairy Tales, Red Agent, Human Order from Zenoscope.
Interesting.
And ahead of Catalyst Prime Noble. So Jazz Maynard, looks like the first issue of it did better than the second issue of the first Catalyst Prime ongoing.
That's curious. Another one I would love to hear what their numbers are is Alterna, their new line of newsprint comics.
Mm-hmm.
Because those are getting all kinds of press. People are tweeting about it and retweeting. I'm seeing stuff in, you know, things like CBR website. And they're, quote unquote, selling out all of their print runs. Now, how big these runs are, that's what I'd like to know. Because, I mean, if you sell out a print run of 500, that's one thing. And if you sell out a print run of 5,500, that's a different thing altogether. So.
Yeah, I've got a few of their books. If you look at the back of their books, they have the list of shops in the country that are carrying them. And there's not many.
Yeah, my LCS is one of them. So.
Yeah, I don't. My LCS in St. Louis doesn't. I don't really know too many of. In where I'm at, that have this, I have to. When I travel to Oklahoma City, there's a shop there that carries them, so I have to pop in there and get into the Alterna.
I'm very lucky. I live, it's not real close. It's not the closest comic book shop to me, but the one I go to is probably the best in the Dallas-Fort Worth area as far as what they carry. And he carries a lot of stuff, and not just the main stuff as well. So, but yeah, I'm looking at the Valiant database right now. You see a lot of things that are under 10,000 as far as monthly sales.
Well, I guess if you're an entertainment company, you got to have more than just comics.
Yeah. I mean, if that's your stated goal as comics, or main thing is comics. But as we're seeing with Marvel and DC, they're moving more, or heavily moving into cinematic arenas for their revenue. So.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, you kind of wonder if that's why DC's doing that thing where, you know, they're going to do some standalone series or books or things to kind of cater to a different crowd.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you do what you have to. You try to find a new audience, and the people who read comic books are going to change just like everything else. And tastes are going to change. Standards are going to change. As you say, you know, we've talked about just in this podcast here about how things have gone from more of a ongoing to now getting more into limited and very limited series, and that may change or it may continue that way. I don't know. But there's more comic books than ever, as far as more good stuff than ever, I think, out right now.
Well, yeah, I guess there's a problem. There's just too much good stuff out there to read.
Right. Unless you're Ronnie, who manages to read everything, or just about, or Mike Myers.
Yeah, I think that was Mike Myers.
Well, Ronnie runs him a pretty close second. I know that guy reads a crap load of stuff, more so than I could possibly get to. But.
Yeah, so that's why I highly recommend Hoopla to get free stuff from the library. I think people are doing some the Comixology or the Marvel Unlimited, but there's really, is Comixology the only source or a good source you can have for independent comics?
The only one that's – yeah, probably I would say – I mean, I'm sure there's some others. I know I'm trying to think of the other – there's another service that's escaping me at the moment. But pretty much, I mean, nobody's going to come close to Comixology as far as what they're offering.
Yeah, Image, that's on
– You can get
that's on by That's owned by Amazon, so I wonder when you're going to start getting free comics.
I don't know.
When you subscribe to, for Amazon Prime, another $3. Well, is that how it works? Comixology, if you're with Amazon Prime, you, for another $3 a month, you get Comixology or something?
I don't have it,
so I don't know. I've never been a digital comic reader, but then I found Hoopla, and I'm starting to kind of move over. Yeah, I've been binging the past 2 weeks on Sandman. Which I didn't read it today. And you know what? Do you have comics that you read when you were younger that you realize that if you'd first read it later when you were older, you'd appreciated it more? I'm feeling that way with Sandman. Yeah. So I didn't read Sandman when it was coming out in the late 80s, early 90s. It wasn't my thing then, but now I've been reading it here for the past 2 weeks and I'm in my mid 40s and it's like, oh God, this is so good. But I know if I had read it in my early 20s, I wouldn't have had the same appreciation for it. And it's not something, and it's one of those things where you have to read it the first time to get that feeling. You can't reread it, I don't think. I've never been able to reread something and feel different about it.
Well, see, for me, it's probably closer to the opposite. I go back and read stuff I read 30 years ago, and I think, how did I like this crap? I mean, this is
Well, that was me and Image. I think for the first 5 years of Image, I had every Image book put out that they ever put out, thinking I was going to like retire early on it, and we saw how that turned out.
Yeah. Well, I started getting a year behind on. Yeah, the early days of Image were tenuous at best, but yeah, I'm actually what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, obviously, is. At 56, I have quite a different mindset than I did at 26. So the tastes are going to change and I'm going to look at things differently. But, yeah, I'm going back and rereading, especially some of the Batman stuff. I'm going back and reading some of the Golden Age Batman. And you have to really get into the mindset for it. Because if you try to read it with current modern sensibilities, you're going to say, what is this? What's going on? If you read it and get in the mind of what comics were in the Golden Age and what society was like, what people's tastes were, then you can appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't guess there were some more independents there in the Golden Age. You had Charlton Comics and Fawcett Comics and
yeah, and I don't think they would have called them independents in those days.
You didn't have the big two that dwarfed everything else because they were about the same size. And there was no Marvel. It was Timely. But you did have DC.
There's a book, and I read part of it. I never finished it. It was called something like Unfortunate Superheroes or something like that. And basically what it was a kind of a companion about because Superman came out in 1937 in Action Comics number one, and it became ridiculously popular. I mean, we're talking about numbers that comic book companies can't even imagine today. You know, 2 million copies a month of Action Comics. Can you imagine somebody selling 2 million copies of something that not even Batman comes close to that?
Oh, didn't they do that in the 90s?
Well, some of it, but of course, you had a lot fewer comic books. But the success of Superman spawned uncounted number of copycat, you know, Fawcett, Bantam, Doubleday, all these anybody who published books in that early golden age started publishing comics, and they just put out dozens.
So what was it comics or was it pulps?
There was both, but they started doing a lot of comics as well. And everybody was getting into those early days, and everybody tried to have their own version of Superman. And there were literally dozens, if not over a couple hundred of different ones, characters that were thrown out. Most of them, you know, the vast majority of them just failed completely.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was just trying to get out something out there and see what would stick. But, you know, pulps were pretty popular too. Have you ever gotten into collecting or reading pulps from the era?
I've read some, yeah. I never collected them seriously, but I've read quite a few.
Yeah, and I've actually gotten a few of the time. Have you ever seen the little big books? And, you know, I think I've got a couple of Flash Gordon ones and some Tarzan ones. And they're really kind of neat. And, you know, the stories are a little adult too, because, and then there's like the Flash Gordon one. It also, you put the little gimmicks in it because it's a really thick book. And it's one of those where you can flip the corners and it's got a little picture in the corner and it's got Flash Gordon and Ming the Merciless fencing. And then at the end, you know, Flash Gordon then stabs him with his sword or whatever. But, I think I got that and a couple of Westerns from the Big Little Books from that era. And they're entertaining. Because, yeah, pulps is a whole different thing. I know, I think when C2E2 is in Chicago, there's also another, there's a pulp show that's on the outskirts of Chicago the same weekend.
This coming year you're talking about?
Well, I know it was this past year, and I think they usually happen at around the same time. So, you know, one day you can go to C2E2, and then the other you can go to this pulp show where you can get the old magazines and the old, well, I wouldn't say they're books. They were like thicker than magazines.
Right.
But or like digest. I guess that's what they were, digest.
Yeah.
But those are interesting to read too. And, you know, I kind of wonder if, I don't know, does CGC grade those?
You know more than I do. You do a lot more CGC than I do, so.
Well, you know, they might be too thick for CGC. All I know is I got a bunch of Treasury editions that I can't get slabbed, so.
I mean, they don't do trades, do they? Do they?
I've got a copy of Batman: The Killing Joke slabbed. Now, is that a trade paperback? Killing Joke?
I don't know how you would.
What about I got the Dark Knight or the Dark Knight Returns? Those are more prestige format.
Yeah, I was gonna say they came out originally as single issues, four or five single issues, and then
Well, I have the single issues,
right?
Slap, but
no, I'm talking about something like, you know, the first 12 issues of the New 52 Batman, The Court of Owls. Could you get the trade paperback? Could you get where they rate that? I don't think I've ever seen that. But
yeah, I don't think you can in slab trade paperbacks. And the thing is. Well, would you? But you know what I'm, you know, one of the big things that's interesting that I found out that I've been trying to get a feel for from Valiant, at least, is their deluxe hardcovers.
Yeah.
They seem to be very collectible, and I've been reading some forums where, hardcovers and trade paperbacks are becoming more collectible to people like theirs. I think one of the most sought after collected works is a Marvel Dracula. Because of the low print runs, it's the first reprintings of some stuff that's hard to get and everything, and, you know, they're not making any more. So, you know, eventually maybe trade paperbacks or hardcovers will become more collectible and, you'll start seeing them graded.
You mind, especially hardcovers, especially special, like deluxe hardcovers. I've got two. Of the Valiant Deluxe hardcovers, and I hope some of those are going for ridiculous money. I don't know if he gets them graded, but I do know that Justin Ehart, I know he bags and boards all of his trade paperbacks as well as his.
Well, it kind of starts getting expensive to start slabbing stuff, so I don't just slab anything.
Yeah, no, nor do I.
And my problem is once you slab it, you can't read it. So I only do it the books that end up appreciating so much that, you know, you just kind of want to protect it. It's like I bought a New Mutants 98 off the shelf for less than a dollar back in 91, and you know, read it, bagged and boarded it. Now 20 years later, it's several hundred dollars in that shape. So you kind of slab it to kind of help preserve that and for insurance purposes.
Yeah. Interesting. I'm looking on eBay right now. Like one of mine, I've got the Armor Hunters Deluxe Edition.
Well, I think what the most desirable Valiant one is Book of Death, isn't it?
I think the Archer and Armstrong ones are pretty expensive too. Pretty collectible. Yeah, here's one placed under eBay, $99. There's one for $50. So let's look at Archer and Armstrong. There's an Archer and Armstrong Deluxe number one for $115. That has been more expensive. It may have come down some. I've seen it. I know I saw that for $300.
Oh, wow.
At a couple points. But,
yeah, it looks like CGC does like magazines.
Oh, I know I would do magazines, but.
Yeah, like, you know, that's one of the things I've never gotten into. And that was a lot of stuff going, like Mad Magazine, Eerie. Didn't Harris, was it Harris that did a lot? Like the Vampirella and things like that back in the day?
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to go back and maybe do some of the Conan, Savage Sword back in the day when you had the, Frazetta covers.
Yeah. So the Book of Death, deluxe hardcover, what? Got some, I see anywhere from $119 to $325.
So if it's got the shrink wrap?
Yeah. Yeah, it's 100. Lower ends are when it's been opened. If it's got the shrink wrap, it's going to be 300 or more.
Hmm. I tell you something that I don't see coming much up from the independents is original art. Unless they're a member of the big two. Sometimes I see some of the independent that Grail put out, like John Sable or...
Terry Moore sells a lot of his original art. In fact, he just had a sale.
Oh, he does do that on his website, doesn't he?
Not a sale as in he was selling.
A discount?
But it was like $450 for one page. You know, there's some. Wow, somebody's just trying to sell their Rye Deluxe Edition for $299. I've got that one. Dang.
Hey, there you go. Just wrap it in some saran wrap and throw it on eBay.
Yeah, could you re-shrink wrap that and not be get away with it? But I don't think this one's shrink wrapped either. This is pre-owned. Doesn't say...
Well, is it scarcity? Out of print?
Could be.
Low print run?
Yeah, I don't know.
See, I try to figure out why some comics are, or why some things are collectible. Now, I know, like, Aaron was
at...
There's
a lot of factors that go into that, so...
Well, yeah. Well, I know Aaron was at New York Comic Con, and he sent those pictures to us, to taunt us, like, the first appearance of Robin that was going on sale for, like, what was it, $35,000, and then there was that detective issue 40-something that Neil Adams swiped for later on. It's an iconic cover that was going for $125,000.
Right.
So.
I don't know. It's scarcity, demand, condition, all of those things play into it.
I know, but it's only worth if you're planning, you know, well, I guess if you're trying to flip it or something, you know, I just try to figure out why you get this collecting bug and why you think something's worth what it's worth. Because some book says or some eBay guy thinks it's worth this much.
Well,
I mean, Detective 27, you know why it's worth a lot.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. But I mean, I, you know, who knows? And it changes. It's like right now, I keep thinking, like, I've got, you know, the new 52 Batman. I've got all 52 issues of that run. The number one issue right now for the last almost year has consistently been, you look out eBay and all this, about $130. I keep waiting for that to come down because I think that that can't sustain that. It can't stay there. But it has so far.
Now, what about the Detective 880 Mac cover? That's the only thing going for that book is the Mac cover, and it's a and it's not even the last issue of the series before New 52.
It's the second to last, but it's that Jock cover. So.
Or Jock, not Mac, Jock. Yeah, that Jock cover. And it's also a Joker cover.
Right. Well, and that's because there's nothing special in there. It's not the introduction of a new character. It's not the death of a major character. There's nothing significant on the content of that book, but that cover just became wild. And it's a damn sexy cover. I mean, it's the Joker, but he's made up of, it's a composite of all smaller bats. If you look at it real closely, mm-hmm. it just does dozens and dozens of smaller bats that are arranged to make up the Joker's face.
Now, well, are there, but you know, so, okay, so that's a character that makes the cover and the cover sells it. So that's something that, you know, independents that don't have as much of a, known characters can't pull off. Can you,
right.
Are there, can they? Well, I will take that back.
Maybe, I don't know.
Because I like to read 18 Days that Morrison's doing for Graphic India. And I don't know who the artist is, but he does, you know, like all comics now, they're you can't have just one cover.
Right.
So these come out with two covers, and it's the interior artist does a cover, and then this guy that paints does the other cover, and the painted covers are just so well done, and they just pop, and they're very, very nice, and I try to get those when I see them.
Yeah, but no, you're right about can't have just one cover anymore.
Well, I don't know. I kind of go through the shelf, you know, and this is like a shop where they don't stack the books on top of each other. You know, if it's not characters, you know, I mean, that's what's going to be your entry point and what's going to draw you into the book. So I think you were reading what, Lady Mechanica?
Yeah.
Did the covers draw you in on that?
Actually probably on that one. Yeah. Cause I had no idea who Lady Mechanica was. I think the cover did draw me in on that because, well, mostly because I like steampunk stuff, mm-hmm. and it's a very Victorian steampunk looking setting. And yeah, the cover on that just really is like, I saw that and like, wow. But I mean, it's not like a popular character like that's timeless, like the Joker, and like on that Detective 880. That's what made that popular. It's like, here's this timeless character that everybody likes, who's, you know, you sometimes wonder who's more popular, Batman or the Joker. I mean, because they're kind of equally, they're yin and yang of this whole of that whole Batman mythos. But you know, I mean, the cover what drew me in, but it's not like I saw it as a recognizable character and think, oh, I've got to have that cover. But what I'm thinking about, you're talking about variant covers. Jim Lee made, and I know he's joking, but Jim Lee said that for Detective or for Action Comics 1000, they're going to do 1,000 variant covers.
Yeah, I think I remember reading that somewhere.
There probably won't be that many, but I'm sure that'll be a damn high number of them. I wouldn't be surprised if they did 30 or 40 or 50 even. Who knows?
Hey, so do you remember so you're talking about steampunk. Do you remember in the 90s techno comics?
No, I missed those.
Oh, you didn't because
early,
you were talking about
early to mid 90s. That was kind of a lull in my comic book.
because at that time they had a Neil Gaiman's Mr. Hero, the Pneumatic Man, which is it was Neil Gaiman, so he was coming off of his Sandman run, and that was a big steampunk thing. So it was interesting. That was an interesting universe that kind of came out and lasted for about a couple of years. I think you can find them in like 25-cent bins all over the place now. But it was amazing, like in the 90s, how with the success of Valiant had, because, that's when Wizard magazine was out, and Valiant ended up being a lot in the top 10 comics. And that was when you had the speculation market going, and everybody thought that Valiant had something going with Wizard to get their comics up. But then, you know, their books like Harbinger and Solar 10 and all the pre-Unity books were just going so much up in price that all of a sudden you had these other publishers wanting to put books out in their own universes to capitalize on it. So you had Malibu and the Milestone. And then when, you know, Shooter got out of Valiant, he did Defiant.
Right.
And then he had these techno comics. CrossGen came out, which I really enjoyed CrossGen. That they just got too big. They tried to expand too big, and then they ended up folding in the middle of their biggest crossover they'd been building up for 2 or 3 years for. And I'm still waiting for the resolution on that. But yeah, CrossGen's where Greg Land first came out of, and you saw him. I mean, he's really got sought after and does a lot of stuff now for Marvel with his painting. You know, I don't know if they're painted, but his artwork's just great. And then I think that's, you know, all that kind of got, Image in the Wilderness until like the early 2000s. But yeah, there was a lot of just universes and everything that got created in the 90s that just, you know, tried to cash in on it. But there were some cool covers. So, are we just rambling now?
Yes, we are, but that's fine. But okay. We probably ought to think about wrapping it up.
Well, all right. I guess we've been talking for quite a bit, so I guess we need to kind of wrap things up. So, where can I get a hold of this, Jay? I'm on the Twitter machine at UTENGR.
I'm at Jay Forgets, or you can Twitter the podcast directly at BOTR Comics. Or you can email us at BOTRcomics@gmail.com.
Yeah. Have we gotten any emails or people been avoiding us?
Haven't gotten any so far.
Well, I guess we're going to have to put some incentives out there.
Yeah.
We'll have to come up with something, entice the people to email.
We'll give away one of Paul's comic books or something.
That's it.
Yeah, somehow. It's easy to say that because I know he doesn't listen to this podcast. So.
Yeah, we'll just sneak up the main, get into the murder shed, and steal some books. But, of course, I think he gave away most of his collection, so I don't really know what he has anymore.
Well, he gave away, and now he's billing it back. So
he is?
And to some degree, especially his Valiant stuff, I know people were giving him, and I sent him a lot of stuff. So I know he was rebuilding a lot of his Valiant collection. I don't know about his other stuff.
Nah, there we go. Well, I think we're going to sign off for tonight, and we'll see you next episode, listeners.
Take care.
That was terrible.
That was pathetic. Boo.
Nerdy Legion.
Nerdylegion.com.